This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Carlene Z. Thank you so much, Carlene. And also, even though we snuck it in there last time without a chance to talk about it, although I did go ahead and record a little snippet that, Summer, unless you listened, you didn't hear. I did a quick little credit rundown for Dallas and the other instrumentalists for the theme music. And so now that we actually have it before a recording, we can chat about it for just a hot second. Summer, what did he send us? He sent us quite a few things.
I mean, it was almost 100% bugles, and and some of them were historical in nature. However, the historical bugle call was the same thing that you heard on the Flintstones before they went charge. So I was like, that's probably not the one we should choose if I'm thinking of Flintstones when I hear it.
Dallas's mom, Denise, is a huge fan of the Outlander show, and she's a listener to our podcast. So thank you so much, Denise, for making Dallas aware of our show. And we love the music. We're so thankful that everything has worked out for the last few years.
And we never expect it.
Oh my goodness. No, we don't.
We're always surprised and so gracious.
We are very hopeful. We don't take it for granted. We're very appreciative of it every time. We wonder and we hope, but I think definitely kind of pinch ourselves because we're just tickled.
I'm positive he's going to outgrow us someday. I don't know that his mom will be enough of an influence to get him to be like, fine, I'll keep doing it. I've been doing it this long. I'll keep doing it.
So what Denise shared was, she shared with me, I want to share about Dallas writing the read-along theme. I just heard it. He was so excited to do it for you. His twin, Derek, plays the piccolo. My daughter and I love your podcast and love Outlander. She just had a girl 2 days ago, and she came into the world listening to Rogers singing L-O-V-E as the new soundtrack released.
Aww.
And the babe's middle name is Mackenzie, and her older sister is Claire. And I thought, that is too perfect. May I share? And I just rhymed. Hello. It's very cute. It was very, very sweet. So thank you.
Super cute. I would like to say that I got into a very long argument with my boyfriend about the instruments used. And I was like, no, that's definitely a piccolo. He's like, no, it's a flute. And I was like, that's a piccolo. And he's like, no, that's a flute.
No, it's a fife. That's what he said in the email.
Well, then we're both wrong, and I'm okay with that.
So here's to give now, quote unquote, live, even though it's recorded, to share what Dallas shared with us. He said the full theme takes the Voyager music, and I'm guessing and hoping he means the Voyager theme he made for us and not the shows, takes the Voyager theme and turns it into bugle calls and a drum and fife music. And as Summer said, he also included three original bugle calls, which we can put... we'll try and throw in there every once in a while, or over the, well, we got time, so we could probably get through them all. So to give credit again, our Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along theme music is by Dallas Crane. He is a film and TV composer. You can find him on Twitter at D-A-L-I-A-S Crane, C-R-A-N-E. And yes, it is D-A-L-I-A-S. And his website is dallascrane.com. And then... on the bugle is Everett Kelly. His Instagram is at Everett, 2 T's, 5012. And on the fifes are Derek and Jackie Crane. And their Instagrams are Sax Spy, S-A-X-S-P-Y, and Fontabulous Designs, F-O-N-T-A-B-U-L-O-U-S Designs. Thank you, everyone. Denise, for bringing your son's attention to it. Dallas, for this creation. And Everett and Derek and Jackie for participating. We are so thankful. Thank you guys so much. And dear listeners, if you guys enjoy our read-along and enjoy our the music that Dallas provides each time, please definitely go check out his website. He's a young composer and he has a bright future in front of him. So again, thank you everyone so much.
And now on to our read along. This week, we will be moving forward with our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with Chapter 3, entitled Keep Your Friends Close.
We're going to dive right into it, guys. This is probably, I can't say ever, the shortest thing we'll ever do, because we haven't finished this yet. But we normally, as I said for the last episode, we normally do a chapter per episode. However, if previously in our seasons, 1 through 5, books 1 through 5, our limit was, I think, 10 pages. If a chapter was fewer than 10 pages, we would combine it with something else. Like 9 was maybe like, okay, maybe not. So this one, because we have so who knows how much time, because when are they gonna, we know they're working on pre-production, right? But like, when are they gonna be filming? We don't know what social distancing guidelines will be like for things like filming, where you got to do love scenes and be close to people and all that. So we figured may as well bring it down a notch and be a little more conservative with the pages. So instead of doing...
and a little bit more of a deep dive in our conversations.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. If it gets too painful, we may have to like start combining a little bit here and there. But this was an interesting example. So last time, I think one of the pages was... one of the pages. Right. One of the chapters was 2 pages. We're like, I can't do that. So we put them together. And this time, what we did, instead of saying, okay, if a chapter is 10 or more pages, it's automatically on its own. Like 9, we'll talk about it. Well, this time around, we went down to 5, which is like a big deal, right? Because that's pretty short by itself. So this chapter, chapter 3, is 7 pages. So if a chapter is 5 pages or more, it gets its own chapter. If it's fewer than 5 pages, then we combine it with something else. So that's why I know it seems confusing. We get this question, especially in the beginning, we get this question decently frequently. And that is, what chapter or chapters do I need to read for this weekend? So, and I've never done a good job about publishing what chapters are going to be reflected in the next episode.
But we do mention it at the end of the episode.
Summer says it. She sets us up for the next week. So it'll always be at the end of the previous episode, or the one that's available when you're wondering. Listen to that. However, the reason we don't, and I don't, if someone asks, I will do my best to answer, because by the time you ask a question, I should have the answer, because we have a general order of, like, obviously we need to know what we're going to be discussing tonight, right? So if someone asks me, I will answer. But as far as going out of our way to post every week what the next week's episode will include, the default is 1 chapter. But then, again, it depends on how short it or its surrounding chapters are.
Just listen to the end of this episode and we'll tell you what we're doing next week.
Okay, so with that having been said, we're into chapter 3. So straight away, the would-be fire rescuers returned to the ridge the next evening. So if they were at the fire for pretty much, well, traveling on horseback or whatever, slash spending time and doing the burial and everything, slash coming back to the ridge was at least a day, right? So they were on the saddle. I think somewhere in the chapter, Diana writes that they were, I think Claire says she had been in the saddle since like 8 that morning. So, and it was now at twilight. So it's a long day. So she's tired. They're all tired. They get to the ridge. It's the night after they had spent the day at the cabin, and they come upon a visitor, someone who is waiting for them. And it's one of our faves, Major Donald McDonald.
This feels like one of the chapters when Diana got really bored with naming her characters. So she's like, Ronald McDonald? No, that's been taken. Donald McDonald, we're done.
Yeah, he's from book five. He's not new, but that's exactly the kind of thing I thought when I first read his name. I was like, really?
He's one letter away from a red wig.
Huh. Major Donald McDonald, he had been with the Royal Army and then with Tryon's Light Horse Guard, or Light Horse Guard, and he is now
He's with Adzo.
And with Adzo. And he's sitting in front of their house on their porch with Adzo in his lap. And as he stands to greet them, Adzo, his rest disturbed, quote, dug his claws into the major's thighs, unquote.
But see, I loved this because to me, it's exactly what anyone who has a cat sitting on their lap would do, which is you start to stand, remember there's a cat there, and then you sit back down because the cat chose you. You will sit quietly and let the cat be there.
This is an almost daily occurrence for me, alas. I have two cats and they're both on my lap at different times. It could be either of them, but it is typically my kitty who I call Monkey A, the older one and slightly larger one. She's more of a lap cat, not in the I want to be all over you, but in the I will condescend to sit in your lap and you may pet me and I will like it. But if you try to get me any closer to you, I'm jumping down. So she's like, I'm happy to sit here and do this. But then if something, if something scares her, whether it's me or a noise outside and she just takes a lick. She licks too, but whatever. Takes a leap. Oh, I have, my thighs are covered in scars. I'm not kidding.
Hot. So the larger question here is, how long will you sit in a chair with a cat in your lap, refusing to get up to even take care of your baser needs, like peeing, because the cat chose to sit in your lap? How long?
It depends. If I'm sitting and I'm comfortable, I can wait a long time. If I have to pee, I'm not waiting that long. If I got to do the other one, I'm not waiting that long unless I can hold it, which is sometimes. However, if I'm lying on my back and I don't have to do anything, obviously, then I don't have to, then I'm good. If I'm on my side for some reason, if I'm on my side for after a certain length of time, whether it's 20, 30 minutes, I don't know what the time is, but like if my, because of the way I'm lying, that like my, one of the muscles in my hip starts to get sore. Because of the way it's pushed or the angle it's in, because of the extra weight on top of it from my kitty, I won't kick her off me, but I will hold her so she kind of like stays in one area while I turn underneath her. Does that make sense? It's a lot easier when you have like a blanket. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a blanket, then the cat's moving. But yeah, I will do a lot to not disturb them. I will not be in pain.
See, and this is why you should have a kid, not a baby, a kid, because there have been times when I have screamed across the house, daughter, come here, go to the kitchen and grab me an XYZ. Why? Why can't you get that yourself? Because the cat's on my lap.
Yeah,
I have roped my 11-year-old into doing chores for me because there's a cat in my lap.
Yeah, I would have no problem with that at all. So Donald McDonald has not intentionally disturbed Adzo's rest and got a little thigh claw going on. Elizabeth K. writes, I had forgotten all about Adzo and Major McDonald's wig until reading this chapter. I love that Diana has little things that run through the books, almost like having inside jokes. That's true. If you've read all the books, especially a number of times that you retain some information, you will find little funny things here, not only because what she says can be funny by itself, but what it's alluding to, or it can be like just, you're like, wait, what? Did she just like call him a sideways term of this? And like, yeah, it can be funny. It can be really funny. The major also had a beer in hand, so Mrs. Bug had made him welcome. It is a, quote, most excellent brew, unquote. And it's Lizzie's brew, the brew mistress. But there's no Lizzie to be seen. Where is Miss Lizzie? Well, she had gone to the McGillivrys with her da. To visit her fiancé. In case we all forget, Book Lizzie has been betrothed to Manfred McGillivray since book five. Heck, I forgot it. So the thing here is season five has moved up a lot, right? Not Lizzie yet. And there is no Manfred as far as we know. So in the book, She is off visiting her fiance's family, and Mrs. Bug is still here at the big house or on the ridge. So since she was female, meaning Claire, she wasn't the one that people would do business with when they came to the ridge. That would be what people waited for Jamie for. But people like McDonald or other men, and honestly, probably even other women, if there was like some woman who had business to do, she'd probably wait for Jamie too if it was like business and not, you know, niceties and stuff. But McDonald would sit and speak and chat with Claire and do gossip and like and polite conversation. She points out that his wig looks much better. And when she remarks upon his getting along with Adso, the terror of wigs, he says, quote, "It is an accepted principle of politics, I believe. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer," unquote. And a shout out to our friend and blue badged Scottish tourist guide extraordinaire, Susan in Pitlochry, because Major McDonald, we find out from Diana, was also from there. He says that he's there at the ridge. He's just there, not like the day before, but the most immediate place he had come from was New Bern, which signals some alarm bells for Claire. It's a 10-day ride, and he looks like he come straight there and rode for 10 days. He does not look like he's in great shape, meaning like dirty and everything.
He's creased and mud-stained.
Yes. And New Bern was where the new royal governor of the colony, Josiah Martin, was living. Claire thinks, I love this. Claire thinks, quote, "I was wary of governors," unquote.
As she should be.
I think the whole clan was wary of that, of governors. Mrs. Bug returns from the spring house loaded down with milk, eggs, cheese, and butter. And there's a rumor that omelets are going to be had. McDonald had come, he says yes, he had come through Cross Creek on his way where, when he was there, he had gotten a load of books and newspapers to bring them from Jocasta. And Claire misses something that McDonald said, and he bends down to repeat it to her, and just then something gets Adso's attention, and he quickly sits up, flexing his claws into his thighs again.
So I was going back to her, him saying that he brought newspapers and books. And Claire's VO is like, "I was wary of newspapers these days." And I was thinking, that's really way more appropriate for show Claire. And Diana could not have seen that as being a possibility.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. That's true. I wonder if they'll use it. So Adso takes off through the surgery window. And what was it that had disturbed him? Well, it was Rollo. Rollo was coming up toward the house. Yay, it's Lassie. He's doing his best to get their attention, wanting them to follow. Claire lets out a JHRC and says, "Bloody Timmy's in the well."
Which just confused everyone.
For them, yeah. Elizabeth Kay writes, "My favorite line of this chapter, bloody Timmy's in the well." This would be so nonsensical to anyone who heard it other than Bree and Roger, and possibly even Roger. Was Lassie being shown in Scotland in the 60s? I don't know. Although the site, Lassie Web, does tell us that, quote, "Challenge to Lassie is based on the story." Oh, I read this, then I forgot it. Now I'm finding it out again. "Challenge to Lassie is based on the story of Greyfriars Bobby. Bobby, a Skye Terrier, apparently slept at the foot of his master's grave in the Greyfriars churchyard for 14 years. A statue of him stands in Edinburgh, Scotland. He has become a symbol of a dog's faithfulness to his owner. Eleanor Atkinson made the dog famous worldwide by writing a book about him. Challenge to Lassie substitutes Lassie for Bobby and portrays his owner, John Gray, as a shepherd, although in real life he was supposed to be a town watchman. Jock, as he is known in the film, Gray, is played by Donald Crisp. When Disney made the film Greyfriars Bobby in 1963 with a real Skye Terrier, Donald Crisp was once again in the story, but as James Brown, the graveyard caretaker. So he may have been familiar with Lassie, even if he'd never seen the show. That was quite a tangent. It's okay. Thank you, Elizabeth, because that's something I probably would not have. That's a hole I would not have gone down. So I'm glad, or would not have gone to look down. Look down, jump down, jump into, whatever. So thank you. It was a tangent, but I mean, have you listened to our show? We kind of have a few of them every so often or every episode. Who knows? And I will include that link to what she provided, which was www.lassieweb.org. And I'll put that in the show notes so you can read all about that. And if you haven't read Greyfriars Bobby, definitely read it. Definitely read it. It's very good.
But they don't want you to touch his nose anymore. Tarnishes because it's constantly like the whole rest of the... Yeah, so the whole rest of the dog statue is weathered and whatnot over time and original. But because of everyone touching it, it's like worn away. And they don't want it to degrade any further. But everyone used to go and every time they'd go, they'd touch him on his nose. So his nose is super shiny and the rest of him is very tarnished.
So Claire and... I assume others as well, go out to see where's Timmy. She finds Ian, quote, a few hundred yards down the path, conscious but groggy, unquote. Now, my first thought, which actually Diana answers shortly, my first thought was, are we supposed to think this is where he fell in chapter one? Or do we think he's been walking or dragging himself some distance? But we find out that that was the case. He'd been moving. McDonald comes to her side because remember, Claire's out there looking for him. And then Jamie arrives and Claire gives us a clue as to what happened to him. She says, quote, something's hit him hard on the head and Chankin. Oh, gosh. Something's hit him hard on the head and taken a chunk out of his scalp. Unquote. Ian, because remember, last thing he remembered was someone shot a gun. Ian says it was a ball. And then Claire says he, quote, he walked some way, unquote. So they haven't been, and this is where it's answering my question, they haven't, or he and Rollo, haven't been there near the ridge the whole time, obviously. So they, the men help Ian, and they bring him back to the surgery and put him on the table, and he tells them what happened, and Claire says, it wasn't a bullet. And she says he was hit by a tree. Jamie confirms, you've been attacked by a tree. That just makes me laugh.
Now, I would point out, it's going to happen until we've moved past the things that they've already done in the last season of Outlander.
Well, we won't because it's the whole book. It goes throughout the whole book.
I know, but I'm just going to say one of the things they definitely kept was the pinning of everyone trying to pin all of the crimes on the Indians or the Native Americans. So this was something that they definitely had that interaction going on between Ian and Hodgepile in season five, the last couple episodes of season five, when they were trying to pin that Dutch cabin burning on someone other than white people, basically.
Yeah.
And their, you know, scapegoat that they're all trying to blame everything on was the Native Americans. So that is something they definitely pulled from this book. And it was nice to see that they kept it.
Elizabeth Kay writes, Ian being indignant that he isn't shot is wonderful. He does sound so much more It does sound so much more manly to say I got shot than to have to say I got conked in the head by a tree branch. I hear you. I hear you. I'd rather just get neither of them, but I hear you. McDonald says that regardless of what actually caused the injury, Ian had met with some banditti. No? Well, Ian confirms that it definitely wasn't Native Americans. Ian is ill, meaning he barfs, and the men leave. Claire continues her exam. His pupils, and thus his brain, are
healthy. It's so nice when you get notice.
By Claire?
No, it's so nice when you get notice that somebody's about to puke.
Oh, hello.
Because then you have options. But when somebody just like leans over and starts puking, you're like, come on. You had to know that was going to happen at least 3 to 4 seconds ago.
I deal with that with the cats. Almost, not every day, but almost every day. And I mean, unless it happens while I'm literally gone, which these days I'm not gone much. Unless it happens when I'm gone, I get warning. Number one, thank God they like jump off the bed. At the very least, they jump off the off the bed and they go.
That cat vomit noise
is not good.
The retching that happens before they actually vomit will wake you from a dead sleep.
Oh, me too. That's what I'm saying. It won't.
Stop it. Will wake you from a dead sleep.
Yes. So, yes.
And you will bolt right out of bed wide awake looking for mess because you know what's going to happen or looking for a cat to move onto the off of the carpet.
I don't move them because it happens so often and they're not feeling well and they're sick. So, yeah, my kitties
oh, I move them because it's way easier to clean up my linoleum than it is my
carpet. I understand. I don't like it, but I'm not going to move a 12 or 13-year-old cat. When I do so, it might, you know, vomit might run out of their mouth even before they're or in the middle of it. No. The funny thing, though, is even
for what it's worth, that's
even
never
though
happened.
I don't pick them up and move them, the funny thing, or not funny, but the interesting thing is if I like, you know, like wake up and go, oh my gosh, and then say, oh, huh, babe, are you okay? If I try to even like walk anywhere near them, they walk away. Like they don't want you nearby unless they're in the middle of, if they've already started, they're like camped. But if they're just doing the whatever stuff, they'll like get away from me. And so sometimes me even waking up and saying, are you okay, baby? And just like standing up out of bed or something, they will leave the room and like, I mean, mm-hmm. they'll camp out right in front of the room, but hey, right outside the bathroom, the bathroom's even better. That's tile. But right outside the bedroom is linoleum. So I don't get me wrong. I prefer it. I am in the same camp as you. I am camp linoleum or tile. However, I just won't move my babies because they both have chronic conditions and, they're not frail or anything, you know, hopefully that's not going to happen or hopefully it's not for years, but I just, it's been a ride. But yes, that sound will wake you up out of a dead sleep, 100%. Oh my gosh. And if you haven't had it, God bless you.
I could be having a REM sleep cycle and pop right out of bed like I just laid down.
Oh my goodness. So he's healthy as far as she can tell. She diagnoses him with a slight concussion. He asks her to feed Rollo, who hadn't left his side, so he must be hungry. But he himself turns down food and drink. But he's asked for whiskey, and she goes, that's a no.
Whiskey, exactly.
That's a no. And then before she leaves the room, Ian asks, this is, I think, important because whenever information is shared, not necessarily throughout a chapter or throughout a conversation, it doesn't mean it's not important, but when something happens either multiple times, right? Or even at least twice, slash, especially when something that has already been hinted at or overtly stated comes back toward the end in the form of it was weird that blah, 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 like a remark or a character like pointedly asking a question about this thing, whatever that thing is. That's a device. Like you're supposed to, there's a reason for it. There's a reason for it. And this is what Summer was getting at, or along the lines of what Summer said. Before Claire leaves the surgery, Ian asks her why McDonald seemed to not pressure him, but seemed to want it to have been Native Americans that he'd met in the woods. And she doesn't know, but she thinks that Jamie will know by now. So
does or will by now.
Elizabeth Kay writes, it's going to be interesting to see why Major McDonald wants Ian to have been attacked by Native Americans. I haven't read this particular book in quite a while and I can't remember, so I'm right there with first time book readers. Now, I have a hunch. I mean, I have read this, recently. I just finished it a few weeks ago, but it's, I can relate it to a role of a person. I can't relate it to a specific incident necessarily, but definitely someone's role in a larger thing, which I'm not going to spoil. So there you go. Wow. So anything else from the chapter, Sam?
No, I think that was pretty succinct. I think we hit all the things.
And I promise, I can't promise, but my plan is to never have a chapter shorter than this on its own. Well, I can't say that because we said the whole 5-page thing. So we're going to stick to 5-page thing. However, if after reading it, it's like, say we don't get any comments that week from any listeners or contributors, or if we don't have like announcements or something else, you know, we'll do our best to make it. We put it this way. We don't like having a show that's less than a half an hour. Minute. I mean, like 26, 27 minutes I can handle. But we really don't want to have like 20-minute shows out there. But, you know.
Mm-mm. No. Hey, I have a question. So reading this chapter, Adzo had a significant role to play in this chapter. And I was just thinking back to the whole last season where they introduced Adzo, where it felt like he didn't serve any purpose other than to just be present for book readers to look at and ooh and ah over. Like, he didn't really have a personality. He didn't make a mess anywhere. He didn't do any cat things other than sitting on Claire's lap and meowing or sitting on a windowsill across the room. they obviously didn't start the running joke of him attacking this dude's wig. So, and of course, we were past this point in the series now, so I don't imagine him coming up now. But do you feel that Adso, the character, is being gypped by the television series?
The character. You're asking such a stupid question, but it's a good question. Not stupid. It's just... You're such a nut. I don't think we're going to get any fancy Adso.
I feel like Adso is the new ring. No, the new ring. Lolo? Yeah, you remember how they threw the ring away, and then like last season they're like, "Oh wait, we can bring the ring back." Everyone hated the new ring. So they brought the new ring back and then just decided to throw away the other ring. And then now they're like,
they're not going to bring it. They're not going to say, "Here's Adso part
no,
two."
No, but now I feel like they're going, it's the whole, "Oh, we got to put him in there or else people will complain." So they're just throwing him in there.
Oh, I see.
So that he can be present. But
I don't care. But, you know, anything, anything they give us, saying, I'll be happy.
Cat book Adso was like a fully fleshed out character. This is just like furniture.
I don't know if I'd say fully fleshed out. He had much more book time than he had screen time. But yes, by not having.
But he did things and he had motivation and he had feelings. And this cat just. Doesn't he's a furniture piece.
So is Rolo. That's what I'm saying. Both animals thus far in the show are not the way portrayed the way they are in the book. And part of it is, okay, it's not going to be the same. I get it. But part of it is also, I'm guessing that it can be kind of hard.
Had Diana Gabaldon written show series version of Adso into her book, it would have been a one paragraph with Claire going, "And I got a cat," and then moving on, and then it would just be, and the cat was in the background, and the cat purred in my lap while I talked to so and so. Don't get me wrong, he's adorable furniture, but he's a prop. That's all. He's just a prop. Like he doesn't do real cat things. He doesn't knock shit over. He doesn't look at you from across the room and knock something off the dresser with making dead eye contact with you. You know, he's not chasing mice or being anything other than a lap cat. He's a lap cat. He's a lap cat prop. Meow. Anyhoozle. And that was chapter 3. Join us next week when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 4, entitled Serpent in Eden. And if you want to maybe find out about becoming a contributor and playing along with our read-along, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/snow, S-N-O-W, for more information and chapters available to sign up for. And of course, if you want to continue the conversation, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Carlene Z. And to find out more how you can support us on Patreon, or what Patreon even is and what a co-producer is, you can find out more at outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.